Hello, I'm Andrew Susskind, and I'm a psychotherapist and author based on the west side of Los Angeles since 1992, specializing in trauma and addictive compulsive behaviors. Welcome to my podcast, named after my recent book and workbook, It's Not About the Sex. Here we have direct and honest conversations related to compulsive sexual behavior and trauma, all from a sexual health perspective. Our intention is to offer fresh viewpoints and practical strategies toward establishing greater intimacy and a more deeply connected life. Let's begin. Stephen Wolt is the founder of Valor Recovery, a peer-based recovery coaching and support system to help men overcome porn abuse, sexual compulsivity, and intimacy issues. Prior to Valor Recovery, Stephen was the co-founder of Veritas, the nation's first completely virtual intensive outpatient program for professionals struggling with substance use disorders. In addition, Stephen is the past president of Freedom Institute, a prestigious nonprofit outpatient treatment facility located in Manhattan that was founded in 1976. Welcome, Steve. It's great to have you here with us today. And I wanted to just comment on today's topic because you shared with me that this is a focus on what you call the spectacular journey from a nightmare to a beautiful love story. So I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about your nightmare and how did you find your way out?
Great. I'd love to. Great to connect with you, Andrew. And it's really nice to be here. So thank you for inviting me as your guest. So I'm in long-term recovery from sex addiction and cocaine addiction. And I live a freaking amazing life today with an amazing woman who I absolutely adore, my wife, Jennifer. But the journey here has been quite the story. And I think it's important to get an understanding of where I've came from and where I am today. And, I grew up in a very violent home, with my father being really abusive, and that kind of set the groundwork for self-esteem and self-worth that I've kind of struggled with for a large majority of my life. Mm-hmm. And, turned to really maladaptive ways to deal with those feelings of insecurity and low self-worth. So that's like the framework of where this thing got started. But, interestingly enough, I was a really successful kind of New York financial services guy in my 20s. Mm. I share that with you because that was a big part of my story, the success I had early in life, the amounts of money I was making early in life, and really not in a position to be able to accept that success in my life. And it just kind of opened Pandora's box to a world of insanity. And I would say it started in the late 90s in New York City when I first got pornography and the internet in my home. Mm-hmm. And, I started using porn, free porn, to numb feelings of low self-worth, loneliness, boredom, anxiety, depression, unresolved childhood trauma. I used pornography and it worked really well.
How did it work for you, Steve?
Because it numbed me. Uh-huh. It just numbed me. Mm-hmm. And, doing that in conjunction with cocaine was a really strong cocktail for me at that time. But as you know, these are progressive conditions. So, I started watching more pornography and different types of pornography. And this, the internet has access to so many different things that I didn't really know existed. And this kind of gravitated for me into fetishes and role playing. And, as a straight man kind of being aroused and turned on by these types of porn was really confusing. Mm-hmm. And very shameful. And, the pornography led to strip clubs for me, and which led to escort agencies and prostitution. And, In 2008, I had gotten fired and fired publicly from my job as a result of my drug and sex addiction. I was in and out of residential treatment programs. I like to joke around between 2000 and 2008, like when the Red Hot Chili Peppers go on tour, they list the cities they went to. I did that with residential treatment centers, and I'd go away for 30 days with the real desire to, get sober, but I'd end up after 30 days going back home, entering the home, going back to working sleep, and within a few months, I'd be back in a hotel room doing drugs and acting out.
So it was a rehab tour.
A great rehab tour and an expensive one, by the way.
I bet.
When I was at those treatment centers, I had this other thing going on in my life that I just was not able to talk about. And it was the way I was acting out sexually. And where it had ended up, the cross-dressing, the fetishing, and all of that, I just did not have the ability to talk about these issues. And as a result, I suffered. And it got really bad. I was, getting to a point where I would relapse and end up in emergency rooms, with consistency with drug overdoses as well. And I had really become suicidal. But for the grace of God, in 2009, I found a residential treatment program in Hattiesburg, Mississippi at that time.
Pine Grove.
Pine Grove, went, Patrick Carnes in the Meadows, that program was in Mississippi back then. And it really opened my eyes to the idea of sex addiction challenges I was having, and it gave me a platform to really work on the childhood violence that was really problematic in my life. And most important, there was a name to what I was experiencing. And there were other men there that were engaging in the same types of behaviors. And for the first time in my life, I didn't feel alone. And so that was a real pivotal moment in my life, beginning to get the process of the help that I needed. And, I ended up relocating to Santa Monica. There was no one in New York. Even my poor mom was like, go west, keep going, And so I ended up relocating to Santa Monica, getting really involved with AA and SAA. And, I think about my journey of recovery kind of in three parts. Part one was transitioning back home and getting plugged into 12-step communities. I'd continued to do a bunch of trauma work, which was really helpful for me. But coming out of the gate, staying sober was really, really hard for me. The obsession to act out and do drugs was so spectacularly powerful. And I had to fight and claw and use the community to really have any chance of gaining some progress in my recovery. And it was not easy. And early on, I had a bunch of relapses that were painful. But what I didn't realize, what I did, I kept showing up. I kept coming back. The men of Alcoholics Anonymous and Sex Addicts Anonymous loved me unconditionally because I struggled loving myself. And I have so much gratitude for those men. And then, the thing that was great about recovery for me was I was able to use those rooms and those men to overcome so much of the shame I had experienced with my behaviors, because now I had to learn, getting a little time underneath my belt, what does healthy sexuality look like? Like, how do you go about and date given what I had done in my acting out? And I had so much shame over these behaviors that I couldn't possibly fathom the idea of putting myself out there and meeting someone. And the beauty of the rooms and the men is they saw things in me I did not see in myself. And what a gift to be able to use those rooms and use those men to overcome the shame and to see parts of me that I could not see, that I was a man in recovery. I was a good man who had been through a nightmare type situation. And I'm just so spectacularly grateful for having that platform to begin to learn what healthy sexuality looks like, begin to date in a healthy way and see what worked and didn't work, and get into a long-term relationship, which was really awesome. And really, the third part of my recovery, which I shared, but it's the life I live today, right? I've been married for years right now to a woman I absolutely adore. The best thing that's ever happened to me has been my wife, Jennifer. I have spectacular amounts of love for her and the life I get to live today. I take my story and I put purpose to it in the service of other people through 12-step communities and the work I get to do today. So I find myself to be just so overwhelmed in gratefulness, where I was, where this journey had brought me, and where I am today, kind of having this conversation with you.
Very inspiring, Steve. And I just wanted to circle back for a second because you were talking about the maladaptive behaviors. We could call that the sex addiction and the cocaine addiction, but also how they were survival strategies. They were the best you knew how at the time. And I think it's important just to highlight that you went through a nightmare, as you call it, and that was the best you knew how to do. And I hear that nowadays it's much more there's much more compassion for yourself and also a lot of love in your life that you're able to receive.
I remind myself, and I work with a lot of men, and I personally and professionally, I remind them, if you could have done better, you would have done better.
Right.
And I look back, and that was the best I can do.
Right. That's great. And I think it's an important message for people to hear because sometimes there's a lot of shame and blame and finger pointing, all kinds of things. And instead, there is this belief that I carry as well, is that everyone does the best they know how at any given time. And I'm so pleased for you that you've found love, that you found connection, and that your life has really moved on and expanded in beautiful ways.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and it's a great story, and it's a great story for everyone, really, but especially for those in early recovery. So why is it important for the promises of sexual recovery to be talked about, and how have these promises really come true in your life?
Yeah, great question. And so I've been to thousands of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, as I have with Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings. And woven into Alcoholics Anonymous is the promises. And you don't hear that messaging in 12-step communities around sex with consistency. There's so much misunderstanding around sexual compulsivity, and there's so much shame around it that what's so important for men in particular to realize is abstinence is just the price of entry. There is a spectacular life waiting for you on the other side of this. I have experienced it, and I have seen countless men experience not only transcending porn abuse, sexual compulsivity and intimacy issues, but thriving in recovery through the power of courage, vulnerability, love, honor, and integrity. To be part of a man's journey there is so rewarding, but you don't hear about that in media. You don't hear about it often in the rooms, and it is so important for people to realize that. There is this incredible opportunity to evolve into wonderful men. I mean, the men that I go to in my life right now, and the men that I admire most in my life, are the men that I know that are in long-term sexual recovery. I've got to see them become incredible fathers, incredible husbands, leaders in the communities in which they serve. They're honest, they conduct themselves with integrity, and that messaging is so important to get out there to the world that there's such an opportunity for doing this work.
Which is really about hope, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah. And I just want to highlight that I know your circle of recovery is men, but in the S rooms, what different fellowships, there's also women who
100%.
are suffering and some who are thriving. And so I just want to mention that as a broader scope. But I appreciate what you're saying, that I don't think there's anything that really compares to the kind of love and fellowship that men can show men. It's just astounding.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The more I'm around with my own recovery, I've come to believe that men need other men to become better men. And men need vulnerability and love role models. It's, you know, and there's something about another man having the courage to ask for help, which I find incredibly inspiring and empowering because it's hard.
Super hard because we're not socialized for that. Yeah. So as a man in long-term recovery, do you still experience shame at times? And if so, how do you navigate shame in your life?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I wish the damn shame thing would go away. So I've gotten so much better with it compared to where I once was. You know, it's like this intense feeling of being flawed. And, you know, sometimes I tie my self-worth to my career. I'll tie my self-worth to what other people think of me. And, you know, those shame gremlins, I think that's a Brené Brown line, can be really loud at times. And it rears its ugly head. But here's the difference. You know, today I can label it. It doesn't take the pain away necessarily, but I know what's going on there. And where so much of my life I was unconscious and blind to that shame tape in my head. Now I have been around long enough to identify what's going on right now. And so, how do I deal with shame today? You know, I deal with shame through, you know, shining the light on it. I deal with shame through the courage and vulnerability to be able to talk about it in my community circles. I deal with shame through the power of storytelling. And, you know, it's so interesting. I don't ever want to lose a newcomer mentality. I've seen so many men struggle in long-term recovery because they lose the ability to be honest about what's actually going on in their lives. And so I always challenge myself to have the courage to share the truth, good and bad, as to what's actually going on in my mind right now. And so shame rears its ugly head on occasion. It's painful, but it passes. And being able to talk about it and share about it. And just because I'm not feeling well today doesn't mean I'm not doing well today.
I also heard in what you're saying that it's a matter of humility, really, to hold that beginner's mind and to know that as much as we know, we don't know, and we're learning all the time. And I think that's really beautiful, Steve. I also hear, and I'm a big Brené Brown fan, as all my listeners know, that you're talking about shame resilience, right? It's not the same experience that you used to go through. There's a resilience and a observing part of you that's able to name it and tell your story about it and share it and be vulnerable. And so it doesn't carry the weight and the secrecy that it used to.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think pretending it doesn't exist, running from it, just empowers it. Versus having the courage to acknowledge it and to sit with it and to talk about it.
So it's not a blind spot anymore.
That's right.
Great. So let's shift a little bit. I want to talk about your program. So what was the reason you started Valor Recovery? And secondarily, can peer support systems improve clinical outcomes?
Yeah, you know, just to step back, you know, 2017, I founded a company called Veritas, which was a telehealth intensive outpatient program, primarily for impaired physicians and impaired lawyers dealing with substance use disorders. And the premise of that program, it was all done virtually, which was, you know, years before COVID, but we integrated clinical and coaching in the same outpatient program. And we were able to significantly improve outcomes by bringing in peer coaching into the program. And there's this huge trend in treatment right now for substance use disorders and mental health, where peer support systems really improve outcomes. And what I realized was, as you move over to intimacy disorders or sex addiction, there was such a drop off in resources for peer recovery coaching and peer support systems, as men were either transitioning out of residential treatment and heading back home. We were so blessed. You're blessed being in Los Angeles right now, where there are amazing meetings all over the city around these issues, but so much of the country that doesn't exist. And so really I wanted to create a support system for men that were dealing with porn abuse and compulsive sex and intimacy issues that I thought it, when integrated with a clinical program, could really improve outcomes. That was the impetus behind launching the company.
Sure. So, for the sake of our listeners, and maybe for me as well, can you just define what peer coaching really looks like and
Sure.
what that does for clients?
Yeah, so our coaches are in long-term sexual recovery. So, including myself as one of the coaches. And so there's just this unique ability to connect with someone empathetically with this shared life experience. And so I have found that to be incredibly valuable in helping men, because we work with men, to overcome shame for accountability, but also to begin to break the barriers down for like psychological safety, where people can actually share what they're experiencing, what they've done in the past. And I think one peer talking to another peer that has the same life experience can be really empowering.
Part of what I think I get tripped up on, and I know others do as well, is the differences between coaching and therapy. And you're talking about a very particular kind of coaching, a peer support system. Help us understand what makes them different.
Yeah, great question. Coaching is not therapy, and coaching, early on in sexual recovery, could and should be done in conjunction with clinical work as well to provide the best possible outcome. But when I think about some of the primary differences between the two and what we do at Valor Recovery, therapy, especially with men struggling with these types of issues, a lot has to do with trauma. Childhood trauma, looking to your past, uncovering and discovering and healing a lot of those traumas. Our coaching and coaching in general is about looking forward. It is about goal setting. It is about accountability. I believe with our coaching, we begin to act our way into a new way of thinking and a new way of feeling. And the coaching and the daily accountability really allows someone to, in real time, talk about impulses as they're happening. In real time, start asking for help as they get triggered before actually engaging in a behavior. And so it's like boots on the ground type stuff, a little person on your shoulder over here in your ear. That coaching for us is about daily accountability and daily work. And so when you do that in conjunction with a therapist or someone, I mean, it's a really powerful combination of resources to really do some meaningful work.
So if we extend that, I'm curious if you can share the differences between peer coaching and sponsorship in the 12-step programs.
Great question. It's interesting. I'm a huge believer in sponsorship, and I've sponsored countless men over my lives. And if someone were immersing themselves into a 12-step program around sex addiction and found a sponsor and was actively engaged in a sponsor, I would say You might be better off working with that individual and from that capacity versus what we do at Valor Recovery. Often men struggling with these issues are not involved in a 12-step community or program around sex and sex and love addiction.
I see.
And they could very well be in long-term AA recovery and doing 12-step work around that, or they just don't feel comfortable kind of being involved in a community-based resource around these issues because of a variety of reasons, including confidentiality. And so, a lot of the work we also do is for men that are transitioning out of residential treatment to really be help them with c coordination of care as they transition back home the next 30, 60, 90 days post-treatment. Accidents happen at intersections, leaving residential treatment and heading back home. Given my own experiences countless times, a big intersection. So really
Sure.
providing support and support systems for that transition.
Very good. So it really provides a safety net in a way, but also has a component of support that is really an additional way to really support someone who may be, I don't know, somewhere like in Wisconsin that they may not have the resources, but this is all available virtually, right?
Yeah, because it's coaching and not clinical. We have a lot more freedom from a licensing perspective, a state jurisdiction perspective, where, although we've come a long way with telehealth for therapy with lax state licensing requirements post-pandemic, but it's still a big challenge
Right.
where we don't have those issues with our coaching program.
Fantastic. This next question is really powerful. I always say on podcasts that, and this is not original, of course, but that we're biologically wired for belonging, for connection, and for love. And we didn't know that before. This is relatively new information, at least in my lifetime. But what's exciting is that what you're really talking about today, Steve, is love. And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about what role does the power of love play in your life today?
It's all about love. It's all about what continues to block me from freely giving and receiving love. It is about getting out of my head and into my heart. I believe that love is the most powerful thing we have on this earth right now. And it is about bringing love into every area of my life. I have really, in my own journey of recovery, equate the word God to love. I had grown up very Catholic, and through 12-step recovery, I've had to kind of make peace with that and trying to figure out where can I access power that could help me thrive in life. And I believe that power is love. And so, sometimes I resist because I think about, well, I don't want to be taken advantage of. I'm Mr. Love. Show up, love here. Show up, love here. Who's this love guy I'm going to be taken advantage of? But there's
Right.
something called self-love. And so, there's never been a time in my life where going higher and bringing love has not improved the outcome, whether it's personally or professionally. And so, when I work with men in recovery, it is about trying to tap into that infinite source of love that's within all of us to make their lives better.
I saw an image as you were talking that the trifecta of love is self-love, love to and from others, and love for a power greater than oneself.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So I couldn't agree more. Steve, we're almost out of time, and a question I always ask our guests is, what takeaways would you hope our listeners could really make portable from today's conversation?
Few things. Never, ever, 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 ever give up, no matter what you are going through, right? Keep fighting, keep coming back. Miracles happen every day. I failed and failed and failed. And the one thing I did right was I kept coming back. So recovery is about perseverance. And that pain that you're going through one day, you will look back on it and you will put purpose to it. And you will realize that your journey to hell and back has been a gift.
Well, that's an incredible way to end our conversation today. And Steve, I really appreciate your wisdom, your perspective, your perseverance, your resilience. Not only is it inspiring, but it really speaks to how you've taken all of these experiences and bottled them up into what you're doing professionally, which is sounds fantastic. So we'll definitely have all of this information available. In our with our podcast that people will be able to access. And I hope one way or the other we'll get to cross paths again sometime. It would be great to see you in person.
I love that.
All right. Well, you take care, Steve, and
Okay.
be well.
All right. Have a nice day.
You too. Thanks for listening today. It was terrific sharing the time with my colleague, Steve Wolt, and discussing this really meaningful topic. He can be reached through his website at www.valorrecoverycoaching.com, and that's spelled VALOR, recoverycoaching.com. And if you're so inclined, please give us a 5-star rating and be sure to subscribe and share my podcast with those who may benefit. I look forward to you joining us the next time, and don't forget to stay connected.